This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Binders full of women, Benghazi blame, and ancient history now. There was a vice presidential debate last week. It's Wednesday in time for
a bunch of malarkey
edition of the Political Junkie.
There you go again.
When I hear your new ideas, I'm reminded of that ad. Where's the beef?
Extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice.
Senator, you're no Jack Kennedy.
You don't have Nixon to kick around anymore.
Lipstick.
Oops.
But I'm the decider.
Every Wednesday, political junkie Ken Rudin joins us to recap the week in politics. Last night's debate could have been illustrated with comic book sound effects. Biff, pow, sock. The Hofstra smackdown saw a peppier president put his rival on his heels for several rounds, but Romney landed a few roundhouse rice as well, while moderator Candy Crowley struggled at times to get the candidates back to their corners. And who remembers that just last week, the number twos, Ryan and Biden, faced off in Kentucky. Jesse Jackson Jr. reportedly has a federal investigation to add to his troubles, and five-term Senator Arlen Specter passed away on Sunday. Political junkie Ken Rudin joins us here in Studio 3A, and we begin, as usual, with a trivia question. Hey, Ken.
Hi, Neil. Well, as you may know, I just returned from 4 or 5 days in Arizona, where, as you also know, I have acquired a sense of Yuma. Yes, if I say that joke one more time. Okay, the trivia question is Arlen Specter, as you say, who died on Sunday. He began his political career as a Democrat. He switched to the Republicans, and then he switched back to the Democrats in 2009. Who was the last senator to switch parties twice while he was in the Senate?
If you think you know the answer to this week's trivia question, the last United States senator to switch parties twice while in the Senate, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. The winner gets that fabulous Political Junkie T-shirt and the brand new no prize button. Ken, we're going to focus on last night's debate in a few minutes and spend most of this hour talking about it. But for right now, boy, I can't remember a physical exchange.
Yes, it was feisty, and I guess President Obama read the reviews of his first debate 2 weeks ago, where he basically either mailed it in or didn't respond as heartily enough as some Democrats would have liked. He was certainly much more temperate than he was last night, and maybe he gave more than he got yesterday. It was to me, it was a lot of it was I know you are, but what am I? That kind of
schoolyard, yeah,
exactly. But. And did it make undecided voters change their minds? I don't know. Did it make any candidate more likable? I probably not. But again, you know, Obama had a case to make that he failed to make 2 weeks ago. And I guess in the view of many people, he made the case.
And one of the things he also wanted to do was rev up his own base. And there he probably succeeded.
He did, absolutely. And a lot of things, I mean, there were so many talks, you know, 2 weeks ago. How could you not mention the 47%? How could you not mention Bain Capital? Well, the mentions were made last. And I'm not saying that Romney did poorly last night. He didn't at all. It's just that we saw a new Barack Obama.
In the meantime, of course, there was that vice presidential debate last week. Boy, these things go so quickly. Vice President Biden said the plan proposed by Republican nominee Paul Ryan was mathematically impossible. This is the $5 to $7 trillion. Ryan disagreed and cited previous examples.
It's been done before. It's precisely what we're proposing.
It has never been done before.
It's been done a couple of times, actually.
It has never been
done Jack Kennedy
done before.
Lowered tax rates, increased growth. Ronald Reagan.
Now you're Jack Kennedy.
Ronald Reagan.
Now you're Jack Kennedy.
Well, look, Biden was cutesy. I never knew Biden. I didn't know that Biden had that many teeth. I mean, I never saw so many teeth in my life. Biden made a lot of good points when he was on target, on the mark. He was very effective. But a lot of it was, to me, condescending, almost rude, diminished. You know, he tried to diminish his rival, obviously. It just a lot of it was character, but the Jack Kennedy remark had nothing to do with, look, obviously it's a reference to Lloyd Benson and Dan Quayle, but
you get it, I get it. I'm not sure too many other people
exactly.
Got it.
The audience did appreciate it, right?
And anyway, the topic of that 47%, the infamous tape revealed by Mother Jones, that video came up last week as well. We're going to be talking about it as it came up last night. But Republican candidate Paul Ryan said Vice President Biden ought to be a little more understanding.
And with respect to that quote, I think the vice president very well knows that sometimes the words don't come out of your mouth the right way.
Well, I always say what I mean.
Nice smile there from Joe Biden as well. And interesting, some people are saying a preview of 2016.
Well, that's, you know, there's something to be said about that. I guess Joe Biden will be, he's 69, he'll be like 73 in 2016. And Paul Ryan will be, I guess, old enough to vote in 2016. And so it'll be a tremendous contrast. Look, it's something to watch. But I think, I don't know, I don't think the vice presidential debate moved the numbers, the polls anywhere. But clearly the vice president knew that the president wasn't up to his game in the previous week's debate. Biden certainly was up with his.
We have some people on the line who think they know the answer to this week's trivia question, and that is the last member of the United States Senate to switch parties twice while in the United States Senate. 800-989-8255. Email is talk at npr.org. We'll start with Gary. Gary on the line with us from Omaha.
Yes, hi. How are you?
Good, thanks.
Good. Love your show, you guys.
Thank you.
I'm probably wrong on this, but Richard Shelby came to mind when you said that.
The senator from Alabama.
Richard Shelby did switch parties. He was elected to the Senate in 1986 as a Democrat. He did switch parties right around the time of the 94 election when the Republicans took over, but that was only a one-party switch.
One party, okay.
Yeah, we need a two-party switch. Gary, thanks very much. Let's see, we go next to, this is Martin. Excuse me, Martin is with us from Arlington, Massachusetts.
Hi, shooting from the hip here, Strom Thurmond.
Strom Thurmond.
Strom Thurmond also elected president. Trent Lott wanted him elected president. But Strom Thurmond elected to the Senate in 54. He switched parties in 1964 from Democrat to Republican. But again, it was only one party switch.
Dixiecrat
party.
Well, he did switch. Yes. But when he was a Dixiecrat in 1948, he was not a member of the Senate yet. He was a governor of South Carolina.
Ooh, but Martin, nice try.
Thanks.
Thanks very much. Let's go to Bob. Bob with us from Sacramento.
Yeah, I'll go with Ben Nighthorse Campbell from Colorado.
Ben Nighthorse Campbell is very similar to Richard Shelby of Alabama, a Democrat who became a Republican while in the Senate, but again, only that one switch.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks, Bob. Let's go to, this is Scott. Scott with us from Moffat, Colorado.
Hi. How about Joe Lieberman?
Joe Lieberman of Connecticut.
Well, and he did switch parties. He was a Democrat, and when he lost the primary in 2006 to Ned Lamont, he became an independent. But again, only that one switch.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks very much. And let's go to Will. Will, with us from Berkeley in California.
Hey, guys. My guess is Robert Smith of New Hampshire.
Robert Smith is the correct answer.
Ding, ding, ding.
In July of 1999, he was running for president. Everybody remembers the
big
Bob
Smith. Smith, yeah.
Exactly. He switched to an independent. And then when John Chafee died, chairman of a committee, Bob Smith switched back to the Republican Party after switching to the independent, became a Republican again so he could be the chairman of this committee. So Bob Smith not only switched parties twice, it was in the same year.
Will, thanks very much for the call. We're going to put you on hold and collect your particulars. We will be sending out that fabulous Political Junkie T-shirt and the spectacular new No Prize button.
Makes up for the A's losing in the playoffs a bit.
I guess it does.
Well, by the way, we are not talking about baseball today.
Not today. All right. So, Will, thanks very much, and congratulations. In the meantime, there is Congressman Jesse Jackson Jr., who's been ill with mental problems these last several months. He's not campaigned at all, and now a federal investigation.
Yes, it's apparently over misuse of campaign funds. This is the allegation. You know, Jackson, once upon a time, had such a bright future. He was one of the leading potential candidates for to succeed Barack Obama in the Senate. Of course, his apparent conversations or his staff's apparent conversations with then-Governor Rod Blagojevich certainly hurt his campaign. But look, Jesse Jackson, the election's in 20 days. Nobody's going to beat him in this district, but there are a lot of ugly things being whispered about Jackson, about this investigation, and it's going to be something to watch. He won't lose on November 6th, but we don't know how long he'll be in Congress.
Early voting is underway in several states, and according to some counts, more Democrats, they don't know which way they vote, but according to their registration, more Democrats are voting than Republicans.
That's correct, and that's been historic, and one big good news for the Democrats as well in the state of Ohio, when the U.S. Supreme Court said that the state of Ohio was attempting to stop early voting the weekend before the election, and the court said, no, keep it going through, and also the state wanted to have early voting just for military members, and the court said, no, if you can't make an exception win for them, everybody should have that opportunity.
And will either side gain an advantage or disadvantage from the endorsements in the past couple of days? A honey boo-boo for the incumbent, President Obama, and Ross Perot for Mitt Romney.
Well, I think in all the years we've been doing the show, Neil, this is the first time you called me honey boo-boo, at least on the air.
On the air.
Yes. Well, honey boo-boo, the seven-year-old political expert, was on the Jimmy Kimmel show, and he pressured her over and over again, who are you going to support? And she finally came out to, she endorsed Barack Obama. So I think Barack Obama could be elected. That's a possibility. And Ross Perot endorsed Romney the other day. He said that we can't afford four more years of Obama because of the debt and the military and all those issues.
Well, maybe Honey Boo Boo will show up at the Million Puppet March to support Big Bird and PBS on November 4th. In the meantime, there's some less happy news to report. We're going to be talking about Arlen Specter in just a minute, but we have to remember a couple of other people who passed away this week, political players of the past. Sam Gibbons.
Sam Gibbons, the long-time congressman from Florida, Democrat, briefly chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee. He was a fighter, big battler, and, you know, he left Congress on his own a couple of years ago when he died over the weekend. And John Durkin, the senator, the former one-term senator from New Hampshire, who, if you remember anything about 1974, he lost the election by 355 votes. He demanded a recount, and then he wound up winning by 10. Then his Republican opponent demanded another recount, and he Durkin lost by 2. And then it was in the courts for the longest time until they had a special election the following September. This is, of course, in the middle of Watergate, and John Durkin won pretty handily.
Arlen Specter, won pretty handily several times in the state of Pennsylvania, 5 times elected to the United States Senate, longtime chairman or ranking member of the House Judiciary Committee.
Senate
Judiciary Committee, and a prominent feature in so many Supreme Court confirmation hearings.
Absolutely. We remember the Bork hearings, of course, you know, the one he grilled Anita Hill during the Clarence Thomas hearings. And it's interesting, you know, he was a perennial loser for so many times, lost for mayor, for district attorney, for governor and senator before he was elected in 1980. He was a character, and he died Sunday at the age of 82.
And one of the, well, now a vanishing species, a moderate.
It is sort of an occupational hazard of mine to be stuck in the middle. And I will support my party when I can. But if it's a matter of conscience, I may have to disagree.
And whichever party you happened to be in at the time, that would have applied to.
He was the Arlen Specter party.
Political junkie Ken Rudin is with us. Up next, call and tell us what moment will you remember from last night's town hall debate. But get a pencil to write down separate phone numbers we're using this time. Stay with us. This is NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan. It's Political Junkie Day. Ken Rudin is with us, as he is every Wednesday. Ken, of course, still awaiting his own endorsement from Honey Boo Boo. Ken, you mentioned earlier your great sense of humor. The last few days in Arizona, some interesting times.
Yes, this is thanks to Arizona Public Media and the University of Arizona in Tucson. But the most amazing thing of all, I flew in on Friday night, immediately went to Sandra Day O'Connor's house for cocktails.
Wow.
And spent the next day, all day Saturday, on a pink Jeep tour of Sedona with Sandra Day O'Connor.
And how's she doing?
She's amazing. She's funny. She's combative. She's uncensored, completely uncensored. And every time she booed one of my jokes, I told her, well, once again, you voted with the majority. But she was wonderful. She's
you didn't try that sense of humor thing on her.
Kind of did. Yeah.
Oh, well, yeah. Anyway. Well, she'll not be invited back. Anyway, there's a pretty interesting Senate race there, some say.
There is. That's the one that John Kyle is leaving after 3 terms. The Republican is Jeff Flake, the Republican conservative. I think they're about 6 terms. And Richard Carmona, who has a great resume, former Vietnam veteran, former U.S. Surgeon General under President Bush. And it's got very, very nasty. The Democrats for the longest time have talked about the Republican war on women, and there seems to be some indication that Flake is hurting with female voters. Flake is up recently with an ad from Carmona's former boss when he was Surgeon General, saying that he has this terrible anger problem, that he doesn't work well with women, and that basically has taken over the Senate race. Democrats haven't elected a senator there since 1988, Dennis DeConcini, but the race is very, very close, and that's one of the races definitely to watch on election night.
Well, while Ken was lounging around in sunny Arizona, President Obama and Mitt Romney clearly were busy training for last night's debate. Both landed several punches, both claimed victory after the closing bell. Call and tell us what moment will you remember from last night's town hall debate. We've split our phone lines today, so get a pencil, everybody. If you're leaning Republican, call 800-344-3893. Again, Republicans, 800-344-3893. If you're leaning Democratic, call 800-344-3864. Again, Democrats, call us at 800-344-3864. I'll repeat those again in just a minute.
But and if you're supporting Honey Boo Boo,
call for help. Anyway, Ken, as you looked at last night's debate, clearly the president waited, about 15 seconds before trying to throw his first punch.
Not only that, he also made a point of saying that you're wrong, you're wrong, and you're wrong. And I think a lot of the times, a lot of the complaints I heard about Obama in the debate 2 weeks ago was that Romney made some statements that either may have been factually challenged or seem to be diverging from what Romney had said in the past, and Obama didn't comment on it. So there were it was obviously a concerted effort to make a point of saying that either Romney was wrong on the facts or, and it was interesting, it was no longer about what the next 4 years would be like under Obama or even what the previous 4 years were like under Obama. It was really, according to the president, it was really a referendum on Mitt Romney.
And one of the things that they sparred about, and it was sparring, and this was supposed to be, we kept hearing, this doesn't go over in a town hall style debate, you want to be too aggressive. They were both pretty aggressive.
They were in their face, absolutely.
And you'll hear this moment, this is on a question about immigration, the candidates managed to turn the responses to a debate over pensions.
Any investments I have over the last 8 years have been managed by a blind trust, and I understand they do include investments outside the United States, including in Chinese companies. Mr. President, have you looked at your pension? Have you looked at your pension?
I've got to say.
Mr. President, have you looked at your pension?
You know, I don't look at my pension. It's not as big as yours, so it doesn't
Let me give you some advice.
I don't check it that often.
Let me give you some advice. Look at your pension. You also have investments in Chinese companies. Yeah. You also have investments outside the United States. Yeah. You also have investments through a Cayman's Trust.
We're sort of way off topic here.
I thought we were talking about immigration.
I
came back to what you spoke about before.
I want to make sure.
If I could have you sit down, Governor Romney, thank you.
If we're both off one day, they could sub on this program.
The word wrestling entertainment. Well, first of all, Romney attempted to do what he did very effectively against Newt Gingrich during a Republican debate. Newt Gingrich was peppering Romney about his investments in Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae, and Romney said, well, it just so happens you have it too. So Romney, who's been criticized for his Chinese investments, he probably knew that President Obama had investments in China in companies as well, but Obama clearly had the laugh line that will stick with us.
It's one of those lines. Clearly, this had been a rehearsed, planned attack by Mitt Romney, sort of undermined then by the Obama joke.
Absolutely.
And so that happens an awful lot. Again, we want to hear from Republicans, those leaning Republican and those leaning Democratic. Independents fall into one of those categories, we suspect, after all this time. Republican number is 800-344-3893. The Democratic number, 800-344-3864. And let's see if we get a caller on the line. And we'll start with Gene. Gene with us from Lakeland in Florida. Gene, are you there?
Yes,
I
am.
You're on the air, and you're on the Republican line.
I am.
Go ahead, please.
Well, I just am a strong supporter of Romney, and I think he did a great job last night.
And what point in particular are you going to remember?
The student who was wondering whether he was going to have a job.
That was a cut of tape we played earlier in the program in the introduction to the show where he said it's a shame that, just paraphrasing Mr. Romney's response, a shame that over half of those graduating from college can't get a college-level job.
Absolutely.
And what did you, what meaning did that have for you?
Well, when you invest that much of your time and money in bettering yourself with a good education, you need to be able to go out and put it to good work.
Gene, thanks very much for the phone call. Appreciate it.
All right.
And let's see if we go to the Democratic line. And this is David, and David's calling us from Birmingham.
Yes. Hello. How are you today?
I'm well, thank you.
Great. Well, I'd like to say that Mr. Obama showed heartfelt compassion last night for the illegal immigrant population that is here, that is struggling, that have come here, always come here since the founding of our nation to make themselves better people, to have more opportunity to build our nation up. And to me, the Republican Party has absolutely thrown the United States' moral superiority and compassion towards less unfortunate people right out the back window of our nation.
And what did you think of Mr. Romney's response that the president had promised to put this, introduce a bill on immigration reform in his first year and did not do it for the first 4 years?
Well, we had more pressing issues, and he knew it. And Mr. Obama, when he tried to do it, the Republicans would not work with him.
All right. David, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
And let's see if we go next to, this is William on the Republican line in Columbia, South Carolina.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I'm Neil, but go ahead.
Neil, excuse me. I listened to too many of y'all's shows.
That's all right. That's allowed.
I find myself favoring Mr. Romney.
And in which particular moment did you think he made an effective point?
Well, I think it's more, for me, more a sort of an absorption of his whole demeanor, his whole point of view, and his whole life experience. I finally am dawning on me that Mr. Obama's record over the past 4 years really has not been very productive. And I get the impression from Mr. Romney that, you know, he has been a problem solver, and I think that he would tackle each of these issues because he has a life history of having done so. Mr. Obama, it came clear to me, has probably never created a job in his life. I don't mean he hasn't been in charge of people, but Mr. Romney has spent a lifetime creating opportunity.
And, William, you might be referring to the moment where it was an African-American who got up, Ken, in the audience and asked President Obama, with some measure of disappointment about what he'd done the last 4 years, and the president recited a series of promises that he'd thought that he'd kept. And it was a moment, I think, one of the most effective moments for Mitt Romney when he came back with this.
I think you know that these last 4 years haven't been so good as the president just described, and that you don't feel like you're confident that the next 4 years are going to be much better either. I can tell you that if you were to elect President Obama, you know what you're going to get. You're going to get a repeat of the last 4 years. We just can't afford 4 more years like the last 4 years.
And, Ken, that recital of the record of the last 4 years, I think he did it a couple of different times, and I think every single time it was effective.
I think it was, too. I mean, at one point when he was talking about energy policy, he said that if President Obama's energy policy is working, why is gas over $4 a gallon? If with all his rhetoric, with all his great speeches and everything, if the economy was doing so well, why are so many 23 million people out and looking for work? Why are countless millions stopped looking for work? Why is unemployment been over 8% for much of his term? Now, of course, we know that the president will say that he inherited a mess, and he did inherit a mess. But again, if you look at the last 4 years on people hoping to find jobs and finding them, Romney had a strong case to make.
Again, we're not using our regular phone line today. We're splitting lines. We want to hear from those leaning Republican at 800-344-3893, those leaning Democratic, 800-344-3864. And let's see if we can go back to the Democratic line. And this is Catherine on the line with us from Miami. Catherine, are you there?
Yes, I am. I thought that you were already recorded me. I'm sorry.
No.
Okay, my favorite, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, my favorite moment was when Romney was standing there giving the evil eye to Barack Obama, and he accused him of not talking about terrorism.
Ah.
In the Rose Garden.
Yes.
And I loved it when Obama looked at him and stared right back at him and just said softly, proceed.
Well, we have that clip of tape. This is moderator Candy Crowley doing some on-the-spot fact-checking after Mitt Romney asked President Obama about his remarks following the attack in Benghazi that killed the American ambassador and three other Americans.
I want to make sure we get that for the record, because it took the president 14 days before he called the attack in Benghazi an act of terror.
Get the transcript.
He did, in fact, sir. So let me call it an act of terror.
Can you say that a little louder, Candy?
He did call it an act of terror. It did as well take 2 weeks or so for the whole idea of there being a riot out there about this tape to come out. You're correct about that.
And I think Candy Crowley said afterwards, on the whole, Romney was right. There were different stories coming out from the administration. I don't think people are going to remember that, Ken. I think they're going to remember that first, check the transcript, and could you say that louder?
Yeah, and I think that's why a lot of Republicans are furious with Candy Crowley for her to be fact-checking in the middle of the debate, which you don't see too often. But the fact is, first of all, this was probably President Obama's weakest the least strong argument he had, the government's preparedness before the attack at Benghazi. And the questioner, the original questioner, was saying, why did you reject more assistance, more security for the U.S. compound at Benghazi? And Romney thought he had a winning argument because the truth is the administration did spend 14 days with a confusing and often conflicting message about what actually happened. They were talking for the longest time about the reaction to the anti-Islam slash Prophet Muhammad video, and that's what really caused it. And eventually they came around to saying, yes, this is actually an act of terrorism. But when Romney said that you didn't say anything for 14 days, and it turned out that the next day President Obama did talk about an act of terror, it really seemed to stop Romney in his tracks.
Political junkie Ken Rudin with us, as he is every Wednesday. You can check out his scuttlebutt puzzle and his column at npr.org/junkie. And in the meantime, I'm talking politics, as usual, on Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Here's an email. This is the moment I'll remember from last night's debate is President Obama saying that some manufacturing jobs have gone overseas and are not coming back to the United States. Unfortunately, the debate format and modern campaigning don't lend themselves to answers that are detailed and thoughtful. The fact is, trends in the United States economy involve factors that won't be resolved by just tax cuts or threats to sanction China. It was refreshing to hear the president give a cold, hard fact that the people and politicians of this country have to face and deal with. And the emailer may be right, but boy, this did not help John McCain 4 years ago when he said that in Michigan.
No, that's absolutely true. And now, for all the talk about punishing China and labeling China as a currency manipulator, a lot of people feel that if China responds with some kind of a tariff war or retribution, it'll hurt the U.S. economy. So, you know, China is a great punching bag, but the facts remain, just like the facts remain about jobs being exported and not coming back, the fact remains that maybe, you know, making China a trade enemy may not be the best thing for the U.S. economy.
Let's go back to this is the Republican line, and Joseph is on the line with us from Kansas City.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I think one of the problems that many Republicans have had is having a hard time feeling the love for Governor Romney, not seeing the personal side. But one of the things I was struck with was when President Obama was asked a question by an African-American gentleman who started off by saying, I voted for you last time and now I'm having trouble. President Obama immediately just went into the answer and didn't even say thank you for your vote, whereas I think we saw a much more, I got the impression, a much more genuine concern for the people there by Governor Romney. And I think that we need more of those stories. Some of those are coming out, but he hasn't done a very good job of selling himself, and I think that's some of that came out last night.
It's interesting, Ken. We're told that the difficulties with trying to be aggressive in a town hall meeting is exactly what Joseph is talking about.
Yeah, exactly. And we have seen a more human side of Mitt Romney, certainly from the debate 2 weeks ago, somewhat so last night as well. But I think what turned off a lot of voters about Mitt Romney is that his seeming peevishness about whether President Obama spoke with it was violating the rules. He's a stickler for rules and a strict stickler for time limits. There is a warm side to Mitt Romney, and we've seen it before, but sometimes when he goes off on, I'm sorry, this is my turn, wait your turn, it just seems kind of like off-putting.
Joseph, did you mind his little tiffs with the moderator, Candy Crowley?
I mean, I thought it was kind of juvenile from both directions when they were fighting about that stuff. I mean, that's not what we're there to watch, but But in general, I enjoyed the opportunity to hear them respond, and I could have done without the arguing with the moderator.
Yeah, and as for all the arguments about for President Obama saying that Mitt Romney is getting too much time, as it turned out that when you looked at the final transcript, Obama got 4 minutes and some odd seconds more than Mitt Romney, and that should determine the next president of the United States.
Joseph, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
And it's interesting, you're hearing some conservatives today, A, you're right, complaining about the moderator, and B, saying this was on Long Island in New York. This was a left-leaning group of undecided voters.
Well, and they're also complaining that why did the Romney campaign agree to have the final debate on foreign policy when the economy and the prospect of future jobs, that should be the real issue, except for Libya and maybe Syria and other things, but foreign policy is thought to be a strain for Obama, and yet next Monday's debate in Boca Raton will be on foreign policy, and that could play into Obama's strength.
And it's clearly not an area where Mitt Romney is at his most comfortable, as we saw last night on Libya, and as we saw on his tour of foreign capitals this past summer.
That's right. London and Israel, you're absolutely right.
We're not done with Ken Rudin yet, or last night's presidential debate. The candidates took shots at each other for well over 90 minutes. The least we can do is go one more round. In a moment, NPR's social media guru Andy Carvin joins us with some of the moments that lit up Twitter, Facebook, and other sites. Binders full of women, among others. Call and tell us what moment will you remember from last night's town hall debate. Republicans, 800-344-3893. If you're a Democrat, call 800-344-3864. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan, and here are headlines from some other stories we're following today here at NPR News. Cyclist Lance Armstrong has lost his Nike endorsement contract, and he's stepping down from Live Strong, the charity he founded. The cyclist is set to lose his 7 Tour de France titles over accusations of doping. Armstrong said he was stepping down as chairman of the Livestrong Foundation so the cancer-fighting charity can stay focused on its mission. And scientists have found an Earth-sized planet orbiting a star in a neighboring star system. Researchers say it's not likely to host life because the planet's surface temperature is over 2,000 degrees Fahrenheit. The star system is about 25.4 trillion miles away. Details on those stories and, of course, much more coming up later today on All Things Considered. Right now, Ken Rudin, our political junkie, is with us. We'll get to more of your calls about last night's presidential debate in just a moment. One of the moments that's taken on a life of its own, particularly on social media, came as Governor Romney described the process he went through as governor to recruit women into his cabinet.
I went to a number of women's groups and said, can you help us find folks? And they brought us whole binders full of women.
Joining us now, NPR social media guru Andy Carvin, among the people behind The Back Channel, NPR's online debate. Behind the debate, the site follows what's happening on social media during the presidential debates. He joins us now by smartphone from Burtonsville in Maryland. Andy, nice to have you back.
Thanks for having me, Neil.
And how long did it take a binders full of women to light up on Twitter?
Probably about 30 seconds. As soon as he said it, I saw a number of people posting the phrase with a lot of question marks associated with it. Then the joke started coming in. Probably within a few minutes after that, a number of Twitter accounts popped up. You now have a Facebook group called Romney Binders Full of Women that is just a couple hundred people shy of 300,000 fans. It's actually kind of amazing how this took off as a social media phenomenon last night.
And at the top of the Back Channel page today, a photo of Hugh Hefner that's making the rounds with the caption, Binders Full of Women. Sure, I've got hundreds of them.
Exactly. People really got into it, and whether it was writing pithy tweets or coming up with photos with captions on them, there was certainly no shortage of humor last night when it came to that particular phrase.
Any other moments that particularly attracted a lot of attention?
Well, at the very beginning of the debate, there was a young man named Jeremy who asked the first question, and he was a college student, and a number of people picked up on him because he seemed a little nervous, though he certainly did his best to ask his question. Several people commented that they thought that they had attended his bar mitzvah not too long ago. When another young woman came up to ask her question, people started making jokes about setting them up for a date. And so that lasted probably for the first 20 minutes of the debate. But by the time Binders Full of Women kicked into high gear, it was really no turning back.
And is much of the content humor and sometimes snarky humor?
Well, it's definitely largely humor, but you'll also see things mixed into people's humor. So when the debate was wrapping up, I saw a number of tweets that would say things. I'm really thrilled how this debate went. Thanks for completely ignoring the issue of drones. And so there was a lot of dark humor involved in how people responded to the debate. I think Twitter, Facebook, and all these other social media tools give people the opportunity not only to laugh and commiserate with each other, but also to vent about their politics, and whether that comes out through humor, through anger, you see it in spades during any of these debates.
And how was this debate treated differently on social media sites than the previous presidential debate 2 weeks ago?
Well, I think this time, because President Obama handled himself somewhat better than he did the last time around, there was less focus on the politics of him stumbling, and I think more of an emphasis simply on the potential humor that could come out of the debate. So people were paying very careful attention to what each of the candidates were saying. There was a lot of humor just about the feistiness of it, with people saying things like, okay, boys, settle down. One person said on Twitter, this is the worst rap concert ever. And so I think the fact that it was a bit more of an even debate allowed people to discuss the issues more and discuss the feistiness more.
And is there, if you watched on CNN, for example, there's that little, they have a panel of independent who are watching and they're tracking and you see the lines go up and down as each of the candidates speaks. Is there any way to use a social media response in kind of the same way to gauge how each person is doing from minute to minute?
Well, it's interesting you ask that, because actually 4 years ago during the last presidential cycle, here at NPR, we set up a little system where people could send in tweets with the candidate's name and a number plus a description of what was being discussed, and we were able to process that in real time. So it was essentially a form of Twitter-based dial testing. I don't know if anyone's tried doing that this time around, but certainly if you pay attention to the tone of people's tweets, the types of humor that's coming through, I think it wouldn't be too difficult for someone to make an effort to process the terms people are using in order to get a sense of that sentiment.
Ken?
And did you get a sense that Twitter is used more by Democrats than Republicans, or vice versa, or more by liberals or conservatives? Any unscientific finding you've had?
4 years ago, Twitter was pretty dominated by the left. There was certainly a lag that seemed to exist at that point of time. But things have changed dramatically since then. I think Republicans and conservatives in general have made a very concerted effort over the last 4 years to develop their presence on Twitter. And I think you could even argue that sometimes their presence is stronger than those on the left. And so when it comes to presidential debates or other types of political events, I'd say on the whole, Twitter seems to be split pretty evenly. But of course, it's the tweets that are the funniest or the most scathing that get retweeted. So depending on who's making the comment and how successful they were, it can sometimes skew the appearance of one side being stronger than the other.
Andy Carvin, thanks very much.
Thanks for having me.
NPR senior strategist for social media, Andy Carvin, joined us by smartphone from Burtonsville, Maryland. And if you'd like to follow us on Twitter, you can follow us at TOTN. In the meantime, we want to hear what you took away from the debate last night. Republicans, 800-344-3893. Democrats, call 800-344-3864. And let's see if we can go back to the phones. This is the Democratic line. Sam's on the line with us from St. Louis.
The question I have is on gasoline prices. I keep hearing everybody from Newt Gingrich to Romney saying, well, you know, $2 gasoline prices and this and that, and how under President Obama gas prices have really more than doubled. We all know that it's controlled by oil markets and by other political events and all that. And I don't really know how they can really separate pricing from with the oil markets and corporate events.
It's interesting, Ken. You mentioned that earlier as one of Mr. Romney's telling points, but I think Sam is right. The president responded, well, it was cheap when I took office because the economy was in free fall. We were about to go into the deepest recession in modern memory, and, of course, demand for gasoline was very low.
And so, because the economy is doing so much better, that's why it's $4 a gallon. I mean, Sam is right in the fact that the administration may not have much control over it, but that hasn't stopped the Democrats and the Republicans from making political hay out of it. Remember in 2006 when the Republicans controlled everything, I remember all the Democrats running around pointing at gasoline prices signs saying that President Bush is responsible for those high prices. So if the Democrats could play the games and the Republicans could play the game as well.
We had $4.25 gas price under President Bush. So
the Democrats were not happy about that either, just as right. The Republicans are not happy about the gas prices now.
Thanks very much for the call, Sam. Interesting on that point, there was a fact dispute over the amount of oil and gas that's being produced, and particularly on federal lands, and it was one of those answers where both were both right and wrong. It was fact checked everywhere, and yes, the amount of gas being produced on federal lands is lower, but A, that's part of the fallout from the BP oil spill, and B, yes, the number of leases are up.
Right, and there's also a discrepancy about regarding natural gas and oil and coal and things like that. They each were supplied with numbers, and sometimes they just conflicted with each other.
Here's an email from Jenny in Tucson, Ken's favorite town. My favorite moment was when President Obama reminded listeners about the Lilly Ledbetter Act. Prior to this, Romney completely lost me when he said he wanted to give women more flexibility in the workplace as a solution to the inequity in pay. As a single woman with no children, comments like that make me feel he doesn't consider women who choose not to have children when he thinks about women, as if only women who are married with children matter. How offensive and small-minded. Mr. Obama speaks about women and the issues that really matter, equal rights.
See, I think that just as Libya, I thought, was Obama's weakest point, at least as far as the situation, I think...
It was a vulnerability.
Vulnerability. I think
a strong point on
exactly.
It.
And Romney's greatest vulnerability, especially, it seems to be among women. And when President Obama came out and talked about pay equality and the Lilly Ledbetter Act and Planned Parenthood, it seemed to put him in a stronger position with women than it did with Romney.
And Mr. Romney has been hitting on energy all along. And last night, he made a particular point about questioning the president's backing of oil, gas, and coal in what proved to be a heated exchange.
I don't think anyone really believes that you're a person who's going to be pushing for oil and gas and coal. You'll get your chance in a moment. I'm still speaking.
Well,
the answer is I don't believe people think that's the case that wasn't a question.
Okay.
And shortly thereafter, the president did get his chance and came back with, he'd clearly been prepping as well.
Governor, when you were governor of Massachusetts, you stood in front of a coal plant and pointed at it and said, this plant kills. And took great pride in shutting it down. And now suddenly you're a big champion of coal. So what I've tried to do is be consistent.
And again, they could go back and forth on that, and they did over several issues. We're talking with our political junkie, Ken Rudin, 800-98... No, excuse me, that's the wrong number. That's the regular number. We're not using that in this particular segment. Republicans call 800-344-3893. Democrats, 800-344-3864. And every Wednesday, you listen to the political junkie on NPR News. And let's see if we go next to the Republican line. And Bean is on the line with us from Modesto, California.
Thanks, Neil, for having me on. I love your show.
Thank you.
I'm a lifelong Republican. I voted Republican my whole life. I did vote for Ross Perot, but I was younger and not so smart back then. But my point being, I thought in the first debate, I was really surprised how poorly President Obama did. I was actually kind of shocked. I knew he'd come back a lot stronger this time. I thought he did well. If I had to give it to one or the other, I would have to say that President Obama did slightly better than Romney. I would like to say, though, I thought it was a little skewed as far as the moderator went. I thought she gave President Obama a few more chances to kind of come back and dispute what Romney had said. And just I heard earlier on you talked about him getting a little more time.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was a little unfair. And maybe some of the questions I thought were maybe more toward it would help President Obama a little bit more than possibly.
What question would you have liked to have heard from the audience that you didn't?
Well, like some of the maybe major expenses that he spent on green energy, and all the money that was wasted on some of that stuff.
Solyndra and then a battery company went belly up yesterday.
Right, exactly. Some of that stuff. And just his, first of all, his 2 years, first 2 years with the control of the House and the Senate and getting absolutely nothing done.
A health care reform was nothing?
Well, I'm against that.
I know, but it's not nothing.
Well, but it's one big thing, and I don't believe that all of the country likes it. I like some of the stuff that's in it. Don't get me wrong. I have a college student that's on my wife's medical plan. I like that.
I like the pre-existing stuff. I like that. But there's a bunch of stuff on there, like it's you're forced to do it. And then there's the, going to be the $2,500 tax or penalty or whatever you want to call it that's coming down the pike.
If you don't buy insurance, yes.
Right, exactly. And some people just can't buy it. Some people won't be able to afford it. And then what's going to be the mechanism that's going to make those people...
Well, let's not debate healthcare reform in this venue. But you're
the one that brought it up.
Well, no, you did. But anyway.
Those are some of my points that I'm making. And so healthcare, yeah, that's one thing. But there's so many other things he could have done that he didn't do in the first 2 years. And then the last 2 years, obviously, he couldn't get anything done because the Republicans were doing battle with him, and I understand that.
All right.
But my point was some of the questions were pretty weak, and I thought the moderator kind of leaned a little bit toward Obama. And I know it's really hard to find somebody that's completely unbiased, but I felt, if anything, last night, that was one of the issues.
All right. Ken, both sides sign off on the moderators.
Yeah, but the I saw a lot of conservative anger, not only at Candy Crowley, but some of the questions seem to be Democratic skewed. I think Dean makes a good point there in that regard. There was one question, how do you differ, Governor Romney, how do you differ from President Bush, who I fear that you might emulate when you come into office? And while he gave some kind of an answer, I thought Obama gave a great response. Well, I'll tell you how much they differ, because he's opposed to Planned Parenthood and President Bush wasn't. He's opposed to making Medicare as a voucher program. President Bush wasn't. So
immigration reform, and President Bush was for that, and he's against
that's
it.
Right. Although Romney came back with saying that if you're for immigration reform, where was your program?
Interesting also that candidates were asked right at the end of the debate a question about, you know, what's the biggest misrepresentation of yourself? And it was the coin flip. Mr. Romney went first to answer the first question. By that coin flip, Mr. Obama got to go last at the end of the program after more than 90 minutes. So this is Mitt Romney talking about misperceptions and how they exist.
I think the president's campaign has tried to characterize me as someone who's very different than who I am. I care about 100% of the American people. I want 100% of the American people to have a bright and prosperous future. I care about our kids.
And that 100% was a
clear reference.
And what Mr. Romney came up with after the famous video came out of 47%, where he described them as people not only who don't pay income tax, which is true, but then people who are, don't take responsibility for their own lives. And that 100% just created an opening for President Obama to say this and knowing that he would not get a reply.
But I also believe that when he said behind closed doors that 47% of the country considered themselves victims who refused personal responsibility, think about who he was talking about.
And then he rattled them off, you know, veterans, people fighting our wars, people on Social Security, and a very effective line, I thought. And again, Mr. Romney had no chance to respond.
Yeah, I'm not sure that President Obama really answered most of the questions that were asked of him. He went more in a litany of what's wrong with Mitt Romney, but ending the debate with reminding voters of the 47% comment, which he failed to do in the first debate, may have a very lasting effect, at least all the way until next Monday.
At least all the way until next Monday, when there's a foreign policy debate. And of course, we'll be mentioning that next week when Ken Rudin returns with another edition of The Political Junkie. Ken, as always, thanks very much for your time.
Bye, honey boo-boo.
It's a Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.